Bienvenidos desde Copan, Honduras. I'm your host, David Katzmar, coming to you live on a very special program as we're down here on the eve of the end of the Mayan calendar. Special guest here, Bill Traister, is going to be talking, and special guest Bill Fry, bringing you a perspective on some of the events that are happening here. Copan was one of the significant cities of the Mayan Empire. Right now, we're seated in a hotel that is on top of a pyramid built by the Maya. Tomorrow is going to be a very auspicious day because the Copan ruins, within walking distance of where we are, is going to be host to numerous events beginning in the wee hours of the morning going on throughout all of the day. Your host will be there as well as everyone else. Bill Traister has introduced me to the city of Copan because he has been coming here since the 20th century. He's writing a novel. The name of your novel, Bill, is?
Maya, Spirits of the Jaguar.
Yeah, and he's researching it. This is not an academician, ladies and gentlemen. He is here working with the people of today, walking these lands and understanding it. He's given us a grand tour of various places by virtue of the friends he's made down here. We went to McCall Mountain with a remarkable bird sanctuary there. It's reintroducing the scarlet macaw to more plentiful numbers. Is that right, Bill?
Yes, he's reintroducing the scarlet macaw into the Copan Valley via his McCall Mountain Bird Sanctuary. Lloyd is, it's one of his greatest missions in life, is to put the bird back into the hillsides. There are some down at the park that have been there ever since I've been coming, but at the same time, they're not out living live and free. And so his ambition is to have the beautiful scarlet macaw throughout the valley, so there'll be sightings. And there's already been some sightings away from the park and away from the ruins part.
Indeed. And major kudos and thanks to this altruistic labor of love. He's doing a beautiful job with this park. All of those who ever come here, you definitely want to check out McCall Mountain. And before that, we went up to Marimundo Coffee Plantation. What an experience to learn how coffee is made and hear the stories. It's more to a cup of coffee by the time it winds up in your cup than you may imagine. We had the first hand of experience touring that. But anyway, tomorrow is a very significant time because one of the Mayan calendars, the most famous, the Mayan long count, is due to end. This is a cycle of more than 5,125 years long. I say cycle, but it is actually a sequential long count, which is non-cyclical like the other Mayan calendars, such as the Dzogchen and the Hab, and the 52-year calendar round, which is a combination of the two. So we're going to be experiencing this live. We had the pleasure of being guided through the Copan ruins by Dr. David Sadat, who is one of the major archaeologists who, Bill, would you just mention a little bit some of the things that Dr. Sadat has done and what he has discovered?
Well, Dr. David Sadat's a dirt under the fingernails kind of archaeologist. He was crucial to the finding of what would be called the Margarita, which he named because they had such a great party afterwards of possibly finding on the way to the tomb, the founding father of Copan named Yaxcucmo. And they celebrated a little early because there was more rooms to go and more tunnels to dig. And when they went to dug a little further, they found Yaxcucmo's wife, who was covered in what is called cinnabar, which is mercury. It's kind of a red coating. And they found a glorious tomb full of jade and bones and vessels. But after they thought they had discovered Yaxcucmo, but a bone expert came down and said, nope, that's a lady. It's not. And as it turns out, we believe that this wonderful lady who lived well into her 80s and was 5 foot tall was Yaxcucmo again, the founding father of Copan, his wife. And he married her. She was a local lady, so he married into the local community. Okay. And then therefore just Basically, what happened was there was more digging to do to get down to Yashkukmo, but eventually they did find him. And they know that it was Yashkukmo because various bones of his body was broken, but his right forearm had been shattered, and there's something called the Altar Q, which is up on the high city, as I call it, up on the Acropolis. And there's an altar of 16 kings where the final king who built this altar, who created this altar, a guy named Yash Pasat Choen Yawat, is receiving the sacred scepter of titlement from the original founding father, and on this altar there are 16 kings. So there's kind of a controversy as to why he would make this altar, because it's a completion. If there's only four kings on four sides, that's 16. What happens next?
You can't put a 17th on there, can you, Bill?
You cannot, but there was, we will talk maybe later about the potential 17th king.
A land of wonder, and what wonderful things we're discovering. Folks, I can tell you, I can so understand why a great empire would have been built here. This is a wondrous, beautiful land. Bill Fry, you've seen some of this. You went up to the hot springs. You've been traveling around. You've been up in the mountains like that. Could you share a little bit what it's like being here and seeing this part of Central America?
Well, one of the things I've noticed here is it's extremely green. The mountains are very hilly just mounds. It's not just like the Rocky Mountains or the Blue Ridge Mountains, which is a solid mountain that runs for miles. Three cups of mountains all over the place, and it's very green and a wonderful-looking place. We went up to the hot springs, and it kind of keeping in that way that things look out here, it was a cascade of pools, one after the other, just like the mountains look around here. And there were two separate areas that, you know, where the hot water comes in. They have two different sources in that one area that we went to. And the pools that are closest to the source are much hotter. And as each pool cascades down the mountain, it cools off. And it was very wonderful. A huge canopy of large trees above you with iguanas walking around up in the trees. And, of course, you know, I cleared everywhere through the canopies and could not find them. But my son was able to find all of those, and you know, he's got a lot of photographs of it. I just obviously I don't have the eye for finding these. At my age, it's hard to read just a newspaper in front of you, let alone finding an iguana up in the canopy 100 feet above your head. But one of the things that they do have there is they have this mud bath that, you know, as many hot springs that you might go to always have a hot mud bath. They have this mud bath there that you can sit in and apply the mud to yourself, but they also have a stone here that you rub onto another stone, and it removes a white mud that you put on afterwards. It's like a cake or a layer on the end of the mud. And then you go up to an area where you walk around it's a statue that's there, and there's stones on two different sides. One's hot water on one side and cool water on the other side, and you walk around on these smooth river stones to massage your feet while you wait for the mud to dry. And then at that point, you go back down to the mud bath and rinse that off and proceed onward up through the different cascading pools as the temperature increases, and hopefully you can make it to the top if you can withstand the temperature. And it was a wonderful experience. And Copan, to me, is a very beautiful place. The people are so lovely. And I know I'm saying up too much, but I think that if anybody was to come down here who has ever been outside of the United States would find that this is a very friendly place to be, a very exciting place with wonderful ruins, wonderful countryside, beautiful the birds that are here, you know, in the Macaw sanctuary that we went to, and the views from the different trips that you go on just are absolutely breathtaking. And I can't say enough about how wonderful this place really is.
Wow. Bill, thanks. You said that better than I would have. And I just want you to know that we're going to be doing a lot of photographs up on the internet about this at MotherEarthFatherSky.org. Give us about a week shortly before the end of the year 2012. Go to Mother Earth, FatherSky.org, and look for the link for Copan 2012. But we're going to be getting to the phones here in a little bit, but we've got a surprise guest who's going to tell us about where we're staying. We're at Don Udo's Hotel, a delightful, magical place. But Bill, can you give us a little introduction of our guest, and then you can hear from her.
Introduce herself.
Works for me.
She's the daughter of the wonderful Don Udo's.
The wonderful Dutch Don Udo's, yes.
Yes.
Well, we're a very cozy, nice hotel. It's a beautiful place. We have great sky today. There's a few clouds, but no, we're in a small hotel, 16 bedrooms and a cozy atmosphere. We're right now in the middle of our happy hour. Still going. We're stretching it on a bit. what else? Yeah, it's...
Well, there's awesome. There's a phenomenal deck upstairs.
Oh, yeah.
Where you can see, and I personally witnessed a phenomena that is quite unusual, where Copan is kind of a vortexy type of place. And the clouds tend to swirl around. And I happened to be here one time, I think it was in 2004, where the clouds turned into a thin disk, and behind that was the full moon. And it was quite amazing to see that the clouds revealed to me a formation, small in the clouds, but definitely there with a friend of mine. We witnessed the picture, basically, of Yashpasa wearing something akin to a do-rag. He had the hooked nose, the lips, the chin, and his head was there. And I was quite surprised that later on, I think it was 2 days later, I bought a book by the venerable archaeologist, Honduras's most famous archaeologist, Ricardo Garcia, and I was paging through the book, and voila, there was this picture that matched what I saw in the clouds.
Oh, and the clouds are something to see from here. We got a perfect view of the sky from where we are, because the architecture in this area often means that there is a courtyard in the center of the building. So we're sitting here on a second floor balcony overlooking the courtyard. The daytime views are beautiful. The sunsets are gorgeous. The vultures come flying in. It's like an airport landing.
Yes, it is. They vector in.
And there are air vortexes. You can watch them ride spirals without flapping a wing. They just keep going around and around in the funnel that takes them up thousands of feet.
They use the air thermals that, without flapping a single wing, and ride up thousands of feet into the air. And then at night, there's some oak trees on the southeast side of town where they literally, one after the other or many in groups, sometimes they fly right over our head here at Don Udo's and land in the trees. And one of the birds... People like to eat things down here because it's a third world country, but they will not eat a vulture because it is the cleaning machine.
Mm.
So that when an animal dies, they pick it clean, and it's much easier to remove, say for like a horse that is near the side of a road.
Good to be close to nature,
yes,
I'll tell you.
Is.
And this is a magical place. Copan is an absolutely magical place. I didn't grow up here, but I'm in love with it, and I never want to leave. I have to, but I really wish I didn't. You feel the energy, you feel the clean air. It just makes you feel alive. It's beautiful.
And that beauty is reflected in the eyes of every person I meet. People here are quick to return a smile. There's a spirit, there's a joy, and a feeling of love. You're in touch with nature, and yet you're not, you know, out in the outpost somewhere. You are just really living it. You're integrating it. And the food, oh my God. Hey, I've been to some fine restaurants in New York, but they cannot prepare food like you get here because they don't have the ingredients. Eggs never get refrigerated, come right to you. The plantains and everything else.
Everything is fresh. And we have the best steak in town.
Yes.
No
well,
here.
But everything is fresh. They eat so many different things here. You also have flour, special flours that they cook with, and you eat. They eat everything that grows here, and it doesn't grow in all of Honduras. So it's unique to this area and this location. So it's quite special as well.
And everything does grow here. This is one of the greenest places I've ever been in. And Bill Fry, what was that fern we saw the other day when we were up in McCall Mountain? I mean, my God.
My wife My wife is only about 5'2", and it just overshadowed her by probably another 4 feet tall. It was just tremendous. It had a trunk almost the size of a 6x6, and it was just absolutely gorgeous. And I have not seen a fern that grows so huge in my life. And this was up on the coffee finca, which would be the coffee plantation. That was Lloyd's coffee plantation that makes the Marundo.
Cafe Miramundo.
Cafe Miramundo.
Some of the best coffee in the world.
And if you get the Cafe Miramundo, after we watched how that was processed, they only keep their first quality seeds or beans for that process. So if you buy Cafe Miramundo, you know you're getting some really good coffee.
100% Arabica. Not Robusta. Two grades of beans was explained to us, Robusta and Arabica. You get it. Usually it's a blend. You know, you go down, you buy something in your supermarket, and how much Arabica they put in is how much they want to make it better than the old. This is all Arabica. But I know you can't stay with us much longer, but I just want folks to know that we're staying at Don Udo's. Is there a website for Don Udo's?
Yes,
Hotel?
Yes, www.donudos.com, and you spell that D-O-N-U-D-O-S.
.com.
Exactly.
Wonderful introduction for this host to come into a land of wonder and to listen to some. The great scholars of the world are here understanding some of the things that have been going on. And they've done a miraculous job of uncovering the culture, putting the clues together. I thought jigsaw puzzles were hard, but it's nothing compared to what's been done here. But the spirit lives on throughout the ages. It's been inherited by the people who have lived here for so long. Everyone who comes here seems to adopt the spirit and become part of the collective consciousness, and it's one like I've never seen anywhere else.
Beautiful.
Well, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me. Sorry I can't stay longer. It's a busy night, luckily.
Yes, that's true. A busy week. Okay. Very good.
Thank you.
All right, so tomorrow I'll be down at the ruins, come around sunrise.
No, the celebration of the day after the world is supposed to end, which I can talk about a little bit, is the 22nd. To affirm those folks that are afraid that the world is going to end on the 21st, the Maya and the Copan are actually having a sunrise worship ceremony on the 22nd.
Okay. And I might add that I am sitting here in Copan,
and nowhere do I see the end in sight.
Yes.
Yep. Yes. And Bill, isn't it true that this calendar ended in 3114 BC? That's the last time that it ended.
Well, it didn't actually end. This particular sun, which we're in the fourth sun right now, began in 3114 AD compared to our Gregorian calendar. I think it was August 14th, 3114 BC.
Okay.
The next sun, the fifth sun, will be coming up on the 22nd.
Okay. And folks are getting ready for this. Bill Fry, it seems like it's getting busier and busier every day down here. There's more and more people showing up. It wasn't quite as crowded when we first arrived. But they're going to be here tomorrow. And Parque Central, there was a big event last night, and they're showing some wonderful films tonight. So this is it, folks.
Yes, I came here on December 6th, and I think this is my eighth or ninth time to Copan. And obviously, with this magical event happening, this is the busiest I've ever seen Copan. There is events that started a week ago. There was lectures at a hotel called Marina de Copan. There has been a Christmas parade. Led by the children of the schools around here. It was adorable. There was 100 red lanterns out and there was a band. It was like your ears were piercing because of the size of the streets are small. They're river cobbled streets. There are no traffic. There's no street lights or traffic lights. This is a one gas station town. They're finally getting around to building their second gas station.
But no traffic lights.
But there are no traffic lights, no Pizza Huts, no big
Burger Kings,
and they intend to keep it that way forever. And so the children were marching around from the Parque de Central off to other streets, and it was followed by Santa Claus going ho, 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 and they even sang Jingle Bells in English, which quite caught me by surprise. It was a magical event. There's all kinds of activities that are going on in this city. It's maybe this microphone can pick up that there's music going on in the background. Later tonight, Honduras's greatest musician, a person by the name of Guillermo Anderson, a guitarist, is going to be playing at the Parque de Central. It's all free. It's for the people of Copan, and we just happen to be lucky enough to be here and witness it.
And it's certainly worth celebrating what's going on here. You know, these great cycles that were discovered by the Mayan were the result of great observations of the heavens. They discovered the correct duration of Venus before anybody in the West did. They may have discovered the precession of the equinoxes. I can't say that's
proven. Oh, they did. They knew that.
Very good. Very good. And when you look at our trip around the center of the galaxy, our solar system will take about 250 million years to complete that trip. And in the process of that, it goes up and down as it travels in this great circle, kind of like horses on a merry-go-round.
Or undulations, yes.
Undulations is part of the cycle of the fractal rhythms that are going on in our orbit. Now, there's an interesting position happening with tomorrow's solstice, whereas this particular solstice is going to occur where the Earth, the Moon, and the center of the galaxy are all in a straight line. Is that right, Bill?
Well, what's happening is that there's actually a perpendicular, if there's such a word as perpendicularity, mm-hmm. of this event tomorrow, where our solar system will be at a 90-degree angle of the Milky Way, which for the ancient Maya meant many things. It was the underworld. It was something by the name of Xibalba. And in the maw of the underworld will come with the sun, the earth, our solar system will be almost directly perpendicular to the Milky Way as it crosses the nighttime sky.
And the Mayan knew this centuries ago.
Well,
and
more than that.
More than that.
Way more than 1,000 years ago. Far more than 1,000 years ago. We don't know exactly what day or what date the calendar was created. But to the Maya, I mean, we in the modern days now have our computer games, and we have before that our TV sets, and to the Maya, there was no better game than to figure out the cosmos through arithmetic. Back in the day, there were structures down in the ruins, and some of them were topped with stones. And the stones would gather the heat by day, and at night they would lay on their backs, and they would look at the stars, and then after generations and generations and generations, they came up with mathematics, and the Maya were brilliant at mathematics, such that they could actually predict the cycles of the moon or within 14 seconds over an entire year.
Good Lord. And they could predict eclipses, too.
They could predict eclipses. They could predict solar eclipses accurately in the distant past and far into the distant future. People are saying that the world is going to end. There are inscriptions throughout the realm of the Maya, not just here in Copan, but elsewhere, that talk about 2 billion years out to the future, and then trillions of years out to the future. A good friend and advisor to working on the novel, Dr. Christopher Jones, located a mathematical sequence that went out to the 36th power.
Good Lord. But they understood the fractal relationship of not only geometry, but of mathematics and of the cycles of time, perhaps. And there is the Coba Stella, which calculates time by an interval that's just way beyond. It's like the Yuga's exponential.
Yes, it's an enormous period of time. And it's not only time into the past, it's time into the future.
And they have monument that suggests they perceive the past and the future moving in two directions simultaneously.
Simultaneously.
Don't know what that is, folks, but you might want to look up Merkaba in the Eastern religions to see if there's any parallels, because that's a kind of a curious thing. And the mathematics they did this with, well, Bill, their numerical system only has three characters. Is that right?
Well, basically, it's a shell, which means zero, a dot, and then a bar.
That's it?
And that's it. And it's a
vigesimal.
Yeah, I always said vigesimal, but today I heard it was vigesimal. So it's a 20. It's based on a 20, and obviously that's directly related to the number of fingers and toes one has.
Yes, and the time cycles of the Bakhtuns and so forth, they go on to multiples of 20, and so it's just a remarkable system that they have. So learning from the scholars that are down here, the more you get into it, the more you find out it's very deep, very rich, and very intricate. The carvings down here are very intricate, and the entire layout of the city is something of a masterpiece. The ruins today were just all inspiring. I've never seen any structure put together quite
One of the great things about Copan as other Maya sites is other Maya sites use sandstone, because that's all they had. This particular site has something called volcanic tuff or trachyte, which was a harder stone, and it enabled the local artisans and sculptors to create a higher relief, what means depth of sculpting. And so, therefore, the history of this town has lasted throughout the centuries because of the rock is so much harder that they carved here than other cities. In other words, the information of this city is more available to the epigraphers to puzzle about, so to speak.
And there's more to be discovered, right, Bill? We were way up. Bill Fry, when we were way up on top of one of the pyramid areas, we were walking on a grass mound, looking down onto the valley there, and Dr. Sadat said, "Do you know why there's this black cloth here?" You remember that?
I do remember that.
I couldn't figure it out.
None of us figured it out.
And it was weed for
that. And most people would have thought that it was something that you would put down, lay down to keep weeds from growing up in your garden.
Yeah.
And it was underneath the native grass that they have here. And, of course, you know, it was sticking out a couple of places. And a couple of places where they had sealed the rocks with some cement, it stuck out from there. And nobody understood what it was. And it was... it was fun to have this little quiz as to everybody trying to guess what the reason for it was. And nobody, of course, guessed. And then finally we found out afterwards that they had placed this over the slabs that they had found there, because they all had inscriptions on them. And nobody knew originally why those were there. And then they started to figure out that there was a section of the temple that had been torn down. And they, you know, and now the theory is that when they tore that temple down, they set those stones off to the side as in preparation for rebuilding that temple, and they're still laying there because that occurrence never happened. So those stones now lay there, and some point in time, maybe some archaeologist, if the funding's available, will be able to put that temple back together.
Yeah, they've never been seen, so we don't know what
we don't know what's
learned.
There. They're buried. It was a temple that was deconstructed and possibly being moved to recreate another temple. And right next to where this area is something called the Popol Nah, and that is the mat house. And it's kind of like a cross, as you would weave a mat carpet out of palm fronds. This was a place where the governess of Copan, the more elite, because it is in the high city, this is a place where they would make decisions and make laws or guide the people or say to the people that this is the beginning of such and such season to start planting corn, and that would disseminate down to the farmers in the valley.
Wow, this is an exciting adventure, ladies and gentlemen. And those of you who are fans of John Major Jenkins, you might want to know that he's just a few blocks away in Parque de Central. Of course, he wrote Maya Cosmogenesis 2012, wonderful book, I recommend it. And he is one of the people that helped figure out what is the significance of this state with the alignment of the eclipse versus the ecliptic of the solar system and the galaxy and so forth. Excellent work, that. So there is a lot going on here. So what's going on next? What happens after these wondrous events tomorrow and the celebrations that are going on at the 21st? Are we going into a new era? There's a lot of theory about that, but there are some people in this area who believe that, no, there's not going to be earthquakes, and there's not going to be upheavals of like that, but it does mean that when you go from one era to another, you go into a constant.
Oh, yes, over time. It's really quite odd that they're trying to sell the fact that the ending of the world is tomorrow. No Maya living now, and no Maya living in the past, thousands of years ago, believed that there would be a catastrophic event that was going to occur tomorrow. I was quite surprised about two or three years ago when I visited my local Barnes & Noble store. And one of the places where they like to sell the books that are selling the hottest is an end cap. And on this end cap were many books written by people who were predicting the end of the world, and they would guide you through how to get through the end of the world. It's nice of them, as long as you bought their book and paid their, you know, went to their lectures and so on and so forth. But to me, they're charlatans, and it's a real shame that they're misleading and using the ancient Maya to make money. And it's to me, it's almost criminal. But those are for the weak-minded, the guided.
Well, let us remember the words of T.S. Eliot: "In the end is my beginning." And we saw many stella today that demonstrated that they believe that death and life was a continuous cycle ongoing, as opposed to having a singularity, a point of origin from which all of linear time has come. And there's certainly evidence of nature to support that.
You know, one of the things that we spoke with one of our guides that I had today that took us into the tunnels of the Mayan ruins was about what does this mean, you know, this end of the world scenario. And he said that, you know, as far as the local folks here in Copan, or maybe it was his own opinion, but he made it sound like it was everybody's, was that this is a new awakening and a new level of intellect where maybe we finally realize that what, you know, we're doing in life and what's happening in the world, we need to make a change, because we could all be plunging headlong into destruction. Or maybe we need, this is the day that we're going to finally realize we need to make some changes as how we're living our lives in order to prevent that collapse that we're heading towards.
Let's certainly hope so. You know, every now and then we all need a new day. And when that new day comes, and it's something that lasts for thousands of years, then it's a new era for us. And when you look into the four ages that were studied by the Greeks, with the iron and the bronze and the silver and the gold, and that is a recapitulation of the yugas from ancient India, well, so it is that these great cycles of time are observed by the Maya as well. One thing is for sure, we are going into a new period. What is it? I don't know, but we're going to find out through experience, even if we don't have a guidebook on the way.
David, explain to us, because you've digested this very well, about the period of, if we're in the fourth sun, mm-hmm. and that lasts 5,125 years.
Yes.
And as we are going into the fifth sun,
yes.
How does that mathematically, how does, well, that's my friend Bill Fry's phone there. Yes. As we go forward into the fifth sun, mm-hmm. when you add up all five suns for their time period, how does that relate to the precession of the equinoxes?
Bill and I went to the University of Pennsylvania some years ago and listened to a great lecture by author Michael Coe, one of the leading Mayanists. And he asked for questions, raised my hand, he called to me, so I introduced to him what was original theory for me, which was to ask about this Mayan long count, the one that's ending tomorrow, a cycle of more than 5,125 years long. And the question went like this. There are many examples of the Maya dividing things in five. Now, if you look at the precession of the equinoxes, that's what we get our great year from. That's where we get the signs of the zodiac. Many people just say it's approximately 26,000 years. I asked Mr. Coe, could the Mayan long count been observed as one-fifth of the great year? Did they derive this duration as dividing the precession of the equinoxes into five parts? Wonderful moment happened just then. He just stood there looking in my eyes. I was waiting for him to answer. And then he raised his finger up and he said, you know, it's funny you should ask me that, because I was thinking the same thing. And there's nothing more rewarding than finding out an original theory that you may have is not original. Why? Because that's corroboration. Somebody else thought of it, so maybe it's not such a bad idea. Found a couple of people on the internet had said something about this. Okay, so if you're going to contemplate this deeply, consider this cycle, the Mayan long count of 5,125 years, plus some days when you multiply it by five, comes just a little bit short of the precession of the equinoxes, the 25,920-year cycle. So how do you explain that? Bill, we have a culture that had fractal time, fractal relationship, and when you look at the Hob versus, tell us a little bit about the 360-day cycle and the 365-day Hob and the why of in there. And folks, we'll come back to the precession of the equinoxes before we introduce this premise. How do they resolve their 20-day cycles?
Well, the Maya had many calendars, different kinds. There was the Zolcan, which is the religious calendar, which is 260 days. That would be 13 times 20. And that would equal 260. And amazingly enough, this approximates the time where you take a kernel of corn and you put it into the ground and it grows and it matures. Then the Maya would, because we're in a more humid climate down here, they would bend the stalk over to prevent mold from affecting the kernels of corn, and they would let it age on the stalk, and then they would pick it. And then they would let it age more, and then it would have to go 260 days before it would be able to plant it, before the seed was ready to be planted. And ironically enough, that also is somewhat equal, very equal, to the time of Venus, Chakshi Chak, as they would say in the Maya language, that's the name of Venus, as far as the ascension of Venus from the very first day that it appears in the eastern sky as the morning star until it disappears, because it is eclipsed by the sun, so that we cannot see it. And then on top of that, it's also, ironically enough, the gestation period for a human embryo, or the time from when the seed is planted into the womb and the ovary reacts, and to the time period when a child is born.
So we have the 260-day Zolcan calendar, and a lot of times you'll see figures of this are often round and so forth, and that is a calendar that was used also by the Aztecs, was it not?
Well, the Aztecs adopted the Maya calendar, and it's slightly different than the Maya calendar.
Okay.
So when you see a wheel or a round calendar that's in size, that's really the Aztec calendar. The Maya did not have such a calendar like that.
Well, tell us about the tunes and a 360-day period. How do we get a 360-day period as Mayans count the days?
When the Maya had months, but they were different length months than ours were, that the Gregorian calendar is, they were based upon 18 periods of 20-day months, plus a five-day period to equal 365. They didn't care about the 0.25 or the 0.2522 that, well, the 0.25 was added by Caesar in 44 AD, and then Pope Gregory noticed that eventually Easter would be slipping into summer, and we could not have that, and the mathematicians then in Europe were advanced enough to understand that it was 365 days, 0.2522.
Yes.
So
leap centuries.
Right. There was leap centuries, exactly. But the Maya calendar did not require that.
It's more accurate.
It was equally the Maya calendar now, invented well before 44 AD when Caesar did the 365.25 day calendar, is equally as accurate as our calendar is today.
Good Lord. And they didn't do this with calculators and spreadsheets, I can tell you.
Well, neither Pope Gregory or Caesar, but at the same time, the Maya, through their cosmic video game, what happened stars were out, they were able to discern the way that the Milky Way went over the Earth at night. The way the planets, they could not see, for instance, Neptune, but they could see Mercury, Venus, and of course they are on the Earth, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn,
indeed,
as we can see them.
Yes.
And so they were called wandering stars.
Indeed.
They themselves were gods.
Indeed.
So when you talk about the Maya Hob calendar, the 360 days, there was a five-day period that was a month, mini-month, so to speak, called the Wayab. And what that was a period of fear. It was a period of time where you hunkered down. You did not do much.
You were in between counts. Yeah, Bill Fry.
Well, one of the things we learned today when I was talking with one of the guides that we had was his opinion that was not that it was 5 days in a row, but it was 5 days throughout the year. And I'm here with my son, whose wife is from, or his girlfriend is Peru, and she mentioned that in Peru, if a Tuesday falls on the 7th of the Gregorian calendar, that's a bad day, and you don't go out and do anything. So maybe between, and I have nothing to go on, but this information I just received today, I have not researched it, but that maybe there was, during that period back then, those 5 days didn't fall at the end of the year, but there were certain periods throughout the year that if a day fell on a certain period, that might have been a bad day to do anything, so you didn't do nothing. That was a day that you stayed home, and they equaled 5 days throughout the year because the Mayans certainly knew their calendar very well, and they could figure out long in advance what those 5 days per year could be. And so it's just information that just came to me today, so this is just a complete guess, irrelevant to anything that anybody else might have to say, just a thought.
That's a good thought, too.
Well, the Maya calendar dictated what you were at time, particular days, what you were to do and not to do. For instance, one day of each month, 20 days, you didn't have to worry about paying any bills. Nothing was settled up. And so, I mean, take it to the modern day, and the person who's being called by the bill collector all the time and being hounded, there was, if I were alive and I had bill collectors calling me, and hassling me, when this day would arrive, it's a day of respite. I don't have to worry about meeting bills at all. So So it was a day that you did not have to settle obligations.
A day for everything and everything in its day. That's the structured order of society. And the structure also demanded that they had these confluence of cycles that they observed as they followed the planets, they followed the eclipse, they looked at our position in the Milky Way, and they had to synchronize their 20-day months and their 13-day weeks with a 365-day calendar. Hence, when they had 18 periods of 20 days, that equaled 360, so we needed, Bill Fry, some spacer days in there, right? Five of them.
Wherever
they put them, they did put them in there, and that put a spacer, a pause on that 360-day count to synchronize it with the 365-day year. Put all of that together, you've got something that works like a Swiss clock, only it's not a measure of time, it's a calculation of it in a grand scale. Something
based on the stars.
Based on the stars and the heavens and observations of nature. And as we were saying, you can certainly understand how calculations and realization of the universe would be done through nature, because it's manifest, replete through here, like few places I've ever seen. Okay, back to the YF. So what do you do when you have a combination of cycles that almost equals 365, you put in a spacer. Well, without going into the details, I did study fractal time, and if you're going to have a 13-week, you're going to have 13-day year periods, 20 months, you have 20-year periods, on and on into great periods of time. What does the fractal relationship and counting of time have to do with the precession of the equinoxes? Did you ask?
Well, there are some things there. I might beg to differ there, that there were not weeks.
Okay,
there were not weeks. There was months, and the months were 20 days.
Very good.
Okay. The solar calendar was 18 times 20 equals 360, and then the short 5-day month. The religious calendar was 13 times 20, which equals 260 days. So there was nothing like weeks that existed in the Maya calendar.
Yeah, we have to definitely shift out of our familiarity zone and get into a new state of consciousness to understand how their observations nature and put it in calculations that worked more accurately than anywhere in Europe.
Absolutely. Tikal is the largest city, allegedly, that was somewhere well north of 100,000 people, and it's in Guatemala. And while we were plunging in Europe, I should say my ancestors were plunging into the Dark Ages, there was an emergence on the other side of the world of as many as 20 million people here in the Central America, the Maya. And so when the Europeans came to America, they brought with them diseases that they had no way to prevent. Their bodies were not used to these new immunity for diseases. And that Cortez went to the Aztecs. He wiped them out, and he took them into the Aztecs and their gold in 2 years. But when it came to the Maya, I think that they lasted something like 179 years before being completely conquered. And I don't like that term, but to be proselytized by the Catholic religion. And when we talk about the Maya and the Catholic religion merging over in another town in Guatemala, there's actually a Black Christ. And he is black, and that's dark. That's part of Xibalbá. And when we talk about the sacred tree of the Maya, there's sacred trees in other cultures, but the sacred tree of the Maya involved this. It was the Ceiba tree, and it involved the roots as the underworld, and the trunk as the middle world, and then leaves as the upper world, the leafy upper world, where the upper world gods
and the tree symbols replete through the stela, and even the design of the city itself, is it not?
The entire city of Copan is somewhat galactically aligned, but also based upon the tree, whereas the Acropolis, which rises up above the city, above the Great Plaza, is kind of like the roots, the root ball.
Okay.
And then the center, if you lay a tree down, the center of the Great Plaza is the trunk that goes up. And then when you go to the north side of this very great plaza, which I once measured, calculated, it could seat well over 10,000 people, the top of the structures at the top of the Great Plaza, the upper world.
Representing the heavens? Perhaps.
Representing the heavens. And since we're here on this, one of the wonderful things about Copan, as my friends have learned as they've been here, is that the Great Plaza could be flooded. There's a water control system. There's an irrigation system here where the Great Plaza ends on a still no moon night, such that there was a sheen. Right now, currently the Great Plaza is grass, but back in the days there was maybe as much as 4 feet of white lime plaster throughout the Great Plaza. So when you flood that and you have a still night and the stars are out and the heavens are open, you can sit at various points around the Great Plaza on top of the Acropolis. There's a pyramid in the middle that has four sides with four stairways up each side, or on the structures on the south, the north end of the Great Plaza, and you can stare down into the heavens.
Oh, my goodness. So you're looking into the depths, but seeing the heavens at the same time.
You are having a mirror reflection of Xibalba, the Milky Way, the planets, the constellations. And oddly enough, the Maya had 13 different constellations that they used as the procession, their procession of the equinoxes.
I want to come back to the procession. Bill, can you tell us a little bit about, before we get there, the calendar round, a cycle of almost 52 years. This is a combination of a Zolkin interacting. Bill, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the calendar round is a combination of day names like owl or obsidian or whatever, or jaguar. Combined with 20 days names with numbers and 20 day names, and such that when you like gears inside of a gear, the cogs would align themselves with the same number and day name once every 52 years.
Almost every 52 years, actually. And this synchronization of the calendars both lining up. How long does it take?
But that is Western minded thinking. The Maya did not know of the Gregorian calendar. So it was a combination of those day names. They were not aware of it.
Yes.
So this is a cyclical calendar. Such that it equals 52 years, like you said, approximately. But they didn't care about that.
Yeah.
They were not aware of our counts.
Yeah, they're able to have counts independent of that.
Well, let me throw a question in here for you. The 5 days or the bad days, if this calendar round stopped and did not move on those days, because that was a bad day. Would that have made it exactly 52 years?
No, it didn't stop. No.
I want to address this a little bit, Bill, and then we're going to get back over to you. When you take the calendar round, which is the combination of the two calendars put together, it is a little bit. I love this question. Why? Because this is the very point that I'm leading up to. And we're going to take it to the next level beyond this, too. Folks, the way I came in to be interested in the Mayan calendar in the first place, I want to tell a brief story here, is that I was studying the cycles of time, Kala Rhythms, kalarhythms.org, is where you're going to be able to find my theory on the cycles of our society and everyone. Every other society, every nation has internal rhythms, like a person. And conversely, the world society has an even grander scale of rhythms on a fractal scale. I had discovered a 52-year cycle flowing and spiritual energy, call it, not knowing that there was a 52-year calendar round, the Mayan calendar. So when I started looking for durations of this, that led me to the Mayans, that led me to meet Bill, that led me to come down here. But what's interesting, the 52-year cycle that I'm studying is a 52-year cycle based on the solar year. And when I got on the 52-year calendar round, however, it falls a little bit short of 52 years. Where he has a great library on Maya, we found a source where someone theorized that in order to synchronize the 52-year calendar round with their solar year, which is the Hab, they may have had a Maya not of 5 days, but of numerous days, that would then delay with spacer, as they do with the solar year, to begin the 52-year calendar round synchronized with the Hab. It's not proven. We don't know that, but it's possible. Why do I bring that up? Well, it's because when you look at the calendar that's ending tomorrow, the long count, the 5,125 years, plus times five, and again, you have this situation fractured out on a large scale that is just a little bit short of the precession of the equinoxes. But finding in all of these gears of intricate cycles within cycles that they have a way of putting this confluence synchronized with their spacers, the Wyab, possibly on the 52-year cycle. So could they have had a Wyab month at the end of five counts? This could be one, two, three, or four of five, or five of five, of the different great periods with the precession of the equinoxes.
Yes.
Because he did that thing on a scale. That's after example of that. So this could be a cycle that's ending tomorrow. That's theoretical. I can't prove that to you, but there are people who believe this may be true.
One of the things that I want to talk about here as we narrow towards the ending of our allotted time is that, what happens tomorrow? Does it reset to 1.0.0.0.0, or does it go on to does it go on to 14? Okay. And I saw a great lecture today by Barbara McLeod up at my friend Flavia's place called Hacienda San Lucas. And an argument amongst the epigraphers, the scholars, as to whether we reset back to now back to 0.0.0.0.0, or do we go to 14? Point 0.0 point, et cetera. And so Barbara put it very wonderfully well, as it's like the odometer on your car, is that when you go to 100 miles or 999 miles, you go to 1,000.
Yes.
And when you go to 9,999 miles, whatever, you go to 1,000,000. Mm-hmm. And so there's a great disagreement amongst the scholars. But my conclusion, as well as my friend Dr. David Sadat's conclusion, who is a great advisor to my work, is that we do go into the 14th Baktun beginning tomorrow. And that means that when we wake up, but not tomorrow, the day after tomorrow, and that means that on December 22nd, the sun will come up, and we will all be fine, and we'll be on to a new age of enlightenment.
Well, that's a wonderful point to end our note on here. You've been listening to the Cycles of Change radio program. You've been listening to special guests Bill Traister and Bill Fry sharing their expertise. Bill, thank you very much. Your observations, Bill, you described it beautifully, and there are no words beautiful enough to describe this wondrous land. Well, folks, I invite you to find out a little bit more about the cycles of time, because whatever cycle you're studying, you're going to find out something about your own life, because the dance of Shiva or the cycles of the Mayan calendar are replete through everything in your life. Check back with us next Thursday as I come to you live on 8 o'clock New York time, 5 p.m. Pacific, and we'll discuss this and other subjects further. We're certainly going to come back to Mayanism in the months ahead and have some other guests from here in Copan, and we're certainly going to invite Bill Traister back to talk about his works and his forthcoming novel,
on the Mayan world. I'm David Katzmar, your host, signing out for tonight. Thanks for listening to The Cycles of Change.
Very good.